FSN Radio. It's all about what's next. Go to financialsurvivalnetwork.com and sign up for your free weekly newsletter. You'll also get three free reports. The Financial Survival Network. It's all about what's next.
Welcome, and you are listening to the Financial Survival Network. I'm Carrie Lutz, and today is August 27th, 2018. If this show sounds a little bit different than usual, we've moved. This is the new command center, and it literally looks like a command center. I got this cool desk. It's so much better, all of it, and the room is better. We're going to be able to do videos much easier, and it's just, hey, it's my dream studio here. And as always, we invite you to be part of the show. And the email address is kl@carrielutz.com. Right now in the process of sound damping the studio. So it's a little echoey in here. You're probably noticing it. I can mess around with the controls on the mixer, but it's only limited ability to get rid of echo if you know anything about sound. If you do know anything about sound, write me, because I'm always learning. Anyways, hey, sound. So what about gold? Gold went up $20 the ounce on Friday. Why is that for a rapidly depreciating asset that depreciated faster than the U.S. dollar recently? There must be a reason. Well, John Rubino is with us. As always, go to his site, dollarcollapse.com. While you're there, subscribe to his free newsletter. John, one of the most prolific writers in the alternative financial press. John, happy Monday.
Hey, Carrie. Hey, I don't hear any echo. The new studio is working out real well for you so far, I think.
Yeah, well, maybe the echo is in my head. You know, that's entirely possible.
That's a whole different problem.
Yeah. You know, echolalia, that's where you keep talking. You know, you kind of echo somebody who's talking to you. I don't think I got that, but God only knows what else. Only the shrink knows for sure, and he ain't telling. But talk about shrinks. We need a financial psychiatrist for what's going on in the markets here. Maybe start a new specialty in psychiatry. Although you have to go to medical school to become a shrink. So I guess you could become a psychologist. Financial psychology. I mean, you've got the specialty of Trump derangement syndrome. You got mental health professionals who are really practicing that little unique subspecialty, how to get your patient to accept that Trump is the president. And evidently it's not easy. I think the best way to do that is shock treatments, because then what happens is with shock treatments, you forget about what was bothering you. So at least for a while, you will forget that Trump is president, which may not be a bad thing, John.
Carrie, there was a lot of information there that you just said, of which we probably don't want to go any further into.
But getting back to gold.
the gold bugs definitely need some psychiatric help, probably, after what they, or really we, have gone through for the past 4 or 5 years. It's been a really depressing stretch of gold going down year after year after year, while net debt in the world, in other words, how much money we owe, has been going up, which, you know, usually those two things track. As debt goes up, the price of gold goes up, because gold is the offset to all the currency that's being created out there. But they diverged 4 or 5 years ago. Gold's been going down while global debt has been soaring, which shouldn't be able to happen. But on Monday, we got a little reprieve on Friday, when Fed Chairman Powell made a speech in which he was pretty conciliatory. He implied that rate increases would come, but they would come very slowly. And that's an Alan Greenspan kind of policy, which he pursued in the 1990s, where he allowed bubbles to inflate by constantly being behind the curve, you know, raising rates, but raising them more slowly than you would normally expect, given the amount of inflation in the system. And gold liked that. So you saw a $20 an ounce pop on Friday, and it's up another $5 or so today, which could finally be the turn in this thing, because you've got a lot of other structural reasons for gold to go up, regardless of what the Fed is doing. You know, the the speculators in the paper gold market are now net short, which is highly unusual. They don't usually get that pessimistic before gold starts rising a bit. And so this time they've created the conditions for a big short squeeze in which it starts to rise. And then all these guys on the speculator side of the spectrum are short and they panic and have to buy back their shorts, which pushes the price up even further. And you get a big spike. That's one of the things that happens when you've got a lot of short positions out there in any instrument. Financial or real or commodity. At the same time, you've got the commercials who are big banks and the fabricators who buy gold and use it for stuff and the gold miners who are selling gold forward. They're usually net short, but they're pretty close to being net long right now. So the structure of the paper market is really, really favorable for the next 6 months. So just looking at that, you would expect gold and silver to do pretty well going forward. So combine that with normal seasonality in which the people start buying gold and silver in anticipation of Asian buying later in the year. So August is usually a pretty good month for gold. It feels like a pretty decent time to be getting into precious metals. Although I know I've said that a few times in the past when it really hasn't worked out. As I said, it's been a grinding, depressing stretch for gold and silver. But this does have a lot of reasons today to be optimistic about what's going to happen in the precious metal space going forward, which means the junior miners especially, but mining stocks in general ought to do pretty well too, because they're more volatile than gold and silver and more leveraged to the price of those metals. And they tend to go up more and down more than the metals do. So if the metals are going to go up, we'll see these gold mining stocks finally start to perform a bit better than they have in the past.
Yeah, well, so COT, it's showing that the speculators are really, they're on the short side of this, which, when was the last time happened?
The last time they were net short at this level was 1999, when gold was like $275 an ounce.
Wow.
So that was the beginning of a long, glorious run in gold and silver. You know, they were the best performing assets in the market for a long stretch there.
Yeah,
in the 2000s.
For 12 years.
Yeah.
Gold from 1999. That was when I bought my first gold at $281 the ounce. From that point on, it did nothing but go up. And then the crash came. It took a real hit down to 750. It had broken 1,000. And that lasted like 3-4 months. That was when I really started buying. And then like magic, it was back going up, and then it hit the $1,900+ range. And then that was it. Its card got checked. You know, when you look at that short period of time, it looked so much like the Bitcoin parabolic move, except that it went up 6-7 times from its low. But the difference was that it took years to do this. But nonetheless, gold, when you look at it, it only declined only, you know, it went down to like 1,000 or 1,100 for a day. So it lost 800 points, but 45%. Bitcoin, on the other hand, John, lost like 75-80% of its value. It was down to 5,000 at its low point. Still, it's only about 6,700-6,800 right now. But when you see that parabolic spike in any asset class, you need to take profits and wait for it to come back to earth, because Benjamin Graham, one of his favorite sayings was the tree does not grow to the sky other than in Jack and the Beanstalk. You know, it just doesn't keep going forever.
Well, that's one of the most important lessons that any investor can learn, but it's also the hardest, because when something's going up, if you sell, you give up the chance at, you know, the huge run that all the charts look like it's heading for. And it's hard to disengage from something that's making you a lot of money. So you have to learn to do that. Really, the most important lesson in investing is when to sell, to be able to figure out a system that works for you psychologically and gets you out before you get round tripped. And with something like Bitcoin, for instance, there's no real fundamentals to use to value it. And there were a lot of projections out there that had Bitcoin going up into the millions because there was so little of it compared to gold and compared to dollars and everything. And so it was easy to get sucked into that, just like it was easy to get sucked into tech stocks in the late 1990s because growth potential was infinite. And a lot of that growth actually did work out. You know, Amazon really did grow as much as the projections called for back then. But you have what's called a hype cycle that is at work for new things when they're introduced. Because when something comes along that really looks like it's going to change the world, people extrapolate to the end point when it has changed the world and everybody's using it and everything. But the progress of that new thing, that new technology, doesn't move in a linear way.
Mm-hmm.
You have it come out, people get all excited, then they find out, oh, it's going to be way longer than we thought before it gets out to there. And then everybody gets disgusted with it and sells it.
Yeah.
And it crashes and people forget about it. But meanwhile, the progress goes on under the surface until the next wave of hype happens when it starts to actually live up to its hype. And that's where we are with a lot of social media companies and tech companies now. They've taken over the world, and they've had a really nice run over the last few years. It's possible that cryptocurrencies are in the trough of that kind of a process, and that they will actually start to have some real world uses besides being just a speculator's plaything. And we'll have another nice run in cryptocurrencies out there at some point in the future when we actually see how they work and see that they really will change the world. That's possible. Gold, meanwhile, is a known quantity. So you don't get the amazing fluctuations in it that you get in tech stocks or cryptocurrencies. But you still get nice runs when it becomes clear that the currency in which you're pricing gold is being actively inflated away by its government. Mm-hmm. And that's what we're heading into now. You know, all the governments of the world are taking on insane amounts of debt, yada, yada. We all know that story. They have no choice but to dramatically lower the value of their currencies to get out from under their debt. Therefore, gold as priced in those currencies is due to rise commensurate with the debasement of those currencies that we've seen in the last few years and really in the last three or four decades. So that's all out there and it's going to happen. And it's just a matter of timing, whether it happens this year and whether this run is the beginning of that process, nobody knows. And we won't know until after the fact, but we've created the conditions in which we get another, 2008 to 2012 run in gold and silver at a minimum. You know, I think it'll be a much bigger run than it was back then, from, 800 in gold to 1900 or whatever. We could see something three or four times that extreme just based on the amount of fiat currency that's out there. If we if we're going to get to the point, as we tend to in long cycles, where the value of gold is, say, 50% of the value of the world's fiat currencies. To get there from here, you need gold at $5,000 to $10,000 an ounce. Silver, because it's way more volatile than gold, will go up much more in percentage terms than gold goes up in that kind of a run. And the mining stocks, the best of them anyhow, are more volatile than silver. So they'll go up even more than silver does. So that's the kind of thing that that is out there. And it's going to happen, but we don't know if it happens next year or 5 years from now or 10 years from now. And, I suspect somewhere in between the next year and the 5 year range is where it happens. And I've got my finances arranged accordingly, so we'll see how it plays out. But these numbers in the fiat currency leveraged speculating community sectors are just so immense now that it can't not end in some kind of a financial disaster and monetary reset.
Well, what I'm thinking here, John, about cryptos in particular, I think they're going to move with gold and silver from now on. the quality ones. I think a lot of them are going to cease to exist in the next 6 to 8 months because they were just Johnny come latelys trying to get on the bandwagon with all the other stuff, all the other cryptos and make your fortune. But the real ones are going, and Bitcoin very well might not be the prime cryptocurrency. It could easily switch to something else. Won't surprise me if it does. But from now on, they're going to move like with gold and silver, because I believe that their function is going to become more in line with it, giving you some protection from fiat currencies along with the properties of gold and silver. And perhaps they will be more easily convertible, easy to buy things with and stuff like that, so that they will become more currency-like and they will move right in alignment with gold and silver. That's my feeling on it. And really, when you look what's happened for the past 6-8 months since Bitcoin crashed, it's kind of been following the thesis. I'm going to put together some charts with a line for Bitcoin and Ethereum along with gold and silver. But after it crashed, I think it took on a much more normalized behavior. And anyway, we'll find out if I'm right or wrong soon enough, right?
Well, yeah, in your scenario, cryptocurrencies are kind of like tech stocks in the 1990s, where a lot of lesser players came to market and then died off when the hype cycle turned down. But the best of them survived and ended up changing the world. Mm-hmm. So yeah, we could see that happen. But I think for it to happen, cryptocurrencies actually have to start having uses. As you said, they've got to actually be something you can buy stuff with.
Yes.
Or that are used in some other way that implies a big market going forward. So we need to see that happen. And when it starts happening, that's how you know that the next part of the cycle is beginning. So keep an eye on who takes Bitcoin or what banks are willing to use Bitcoin or Bitcoin-like technologies in their settlement processes, or which governments decide to adopt cryptocurrencies as the online version of their currencies. We'll see things like that happen going forward. We're seeing it in troubled countries already, where they start to use cryptos. But when we see major countries that aren't in absolute crisis start to adopt blockchain technology variants and Bitcoin or Ethereum or whatever, then we'll know that the next run is starting. So keep an eye on that.
Yeah. Yeah. In the meantime, I think it's just going to trade at this level. If Bitcoin is the so-called coin of the realm, or coin of the crypto realm, if you will, then we got to see Bitcoin break 11,000 or nothing's going to happen. Under 10,000, you just know it's a trade. It's not going anywhere. And so let's talk about the so-called trade war, which I've never bought the premise of. I don't think it ever really existed. I think it's a handy meme for the media to use, but it really doesn't define what's taking place here. But Mexico and the U.S. looks like they're replacing NAFTA. The local content rules for vehicles, going to be a 5-year implementation process, but they're going to go up. So that means that Mexico will no longer be a transshipment point for Chinese goods, where they get assembled and shipped into the U.S. free of tariffs, which is what Trump wanted. Now, I got to tell you, in this new house I moved into, all the appliances made by a major company, all made in Mexico. The washer and dryer, literally, remember, your washer and dryer used to be like substantial. This thing is like aluminum foil on the exterior. They are made, forget about the inside, but the actual physical machine is made like such garbage, John. I can't even begin to tell you.
I imagine that the planned obsolescence thing is coming to household appliances too, where instead of having your washer dryer for 30 years, you have it for 5 or 10 years and then you swap it out.
Yes.
And then they just recycle whatever they can and trash the rest.
Yep.
I that's a terrible idea.
It really is.
But with technology improving the way it is, it's not a surprise because the new batch of everything, you know, refrigerators mm-hmm. and dishwashers and clothes washers are all computerized now, which means that the versions 5 years from now are going to be vastly smarter and in a lot of ways much better. You know, they'll be voice controlled and they'll be programmable and you know, you can operate them remotely and they'll have all kinds of sensors that tell you when something is wrong. And that's an attractive idea, or it will be an attractive idea 5 years from now.
Maybe.
So a lot of people will be swapping their household appliances more quickly than they did in the past, maybe. Actually, this is probably too much to hope for, but if they were upgradable mm-hmm. wirelessly,
like a Tesla.
Yeah. Yeah. And because of that, you could keep something and it would improve over like a 20-year period. That would be ideal. But I don't think companies want to do that. It's not in their interest. So
no.
It's probably not going to happen that way, unfortunately.
Definitely not. And I don't like the idea of my refrigerator talking to my internet. You know, I don't like it spying on me. Like, I want to know if they can bring the refrigerator into court to testify against me when they
you know they will be able to at some point.
Yeah, like
well, they can already do that with those household control speakers, you know, Alexa and everything.
Yeah, so they're going to have my refrigerator in court to testifying against me. It just bothers me, you know? It's like, yes, he was a subversive and, you know, believed in sound money, and therefore he belongs in prison. And, you know, they get the refrigerator to swear to it. Then they get the washer and dryer in there. And before you know it, you're spending 10 years in jail because of the testimony of your appliances against you.
Yep.
There's something wrong with that, John.
Well, there is a lot wrong with that. The first thing, really, before we get into the criminal stuff, is that you need to watch what you say around your house, and you need to watch what you wear. Yeah. no wandering into the kitchen naked anymore if your dishwasher is watching you, right?
You sure got that
so,
right.
Yeah, this
TV.
It's a whole different world. Well, TV sets already, or some models of TV sets already have cameras, right? That watch you to see what you're doing, to know what kind of behavior that, you know, what commercials they should run and stuff like that. I think that was a prior scandal that already happened and that got taken away. But, you know, they now that they have the technology for it, they'll find a way to fit that in because it makes money for them.
Our
ideas
house.
Of privacy are not what they used to be. They already have changed dramatically because of social media and everything. But now with the Internet of Things, privacy is a completely different concept. Your phone can record you and you turn your phone off, the NSA can still listen to you and know where you are, even though you've turned your phone off. So you can't say, hey, let's take a walk and talk about this sensitive issue. Because either your phone is recording you or somebody with a directional mic is recording you or a satellite is recording your face and an AI algorithm is reading your lips. You know, that's the kind of stuff that's out there now. So life is very different from a privacy standpoint than it used to be. And it's only going to get more extreme. And I don't know what we can do about that because, you know, we don't have countermeasures right now that can stop the technologies I just named. It's going to be really interesting to see how, for instance, spycraft changes in response to these new technologies. Yeah.
Already has. Well, I just don't like the fact that every device in my house could conceivably be conspiring against me and trying to do harm and revealing all my deepest, darkest secrets. There's something wrong with that whole concept, and it bothers me. On the other hand, I like my Alexa clock radio, so I'm kind of screwed. But what are you supposed to do? I don't know.
Don't accidentally buy anything really expensive by talking about it in front of your Alexa.
Yeah, that's for sure. Well, there's a lot more behind that, but trade wars, I think, are going to come to an end shortly. They never really existed, only in the eyes of the media, and became a kind of rallying call against the stock market. We'll have to see what happens, John. Anyway, check out John's work over at dollarcollapse.com. Sign up for both our newsletters. We're at financialsurvivalnetwork.com. Be a part of the show. Email us, kl@carrielutz.com, Twitter feed @CarrieLutz, and The Facebook page is Financial Survival Network. John, we'll talk to you next week.
Talk to you then, Kerry.
FSN Radio. It's all about what's next. Go to financialsurvivalnetwork.com and sign up for your free weekly newsletter. You'll also get three free reports. The Financial Survival Network. It's all about what's next.